save the few moments that we have left, we want to talk right down to earth in a language that everybody here can easily understand.
Welcome, everybody, to this week's edition of the Open Paddock Podcast. Sean here with you. Joining me tonight, we have Mike W. Say hello, Mike.
Good evening.
This is the last week that we have you before you go on vacation again.
Yes.
Again.
Yes.
I wish I could go to the mountains. Which mountain range are you going to this time?
Going back to the Smokies. I'm pretty much a broken record, so.
Hate. I'm going to go to the Smoky Mountains. I actually have relatives who live in the Knoxville area.
Oh, step up, exploit.
Yeah, I really do like that area, Knoxville, the Smokies, all that stuff. So kind of mad that you're going and I can't. But yeah, well, let's see. I think a lot of people
I'll wave at UT as I go by.
Nice. Please do. We need help. In fact, stop and write a check. I bet a lot of people could use a vacation after this past week's IZOD IndyCar Series race, as it was a little less than desirable outcome. Belle Isle, we'll get into that. There was a Mazda Road Indy stuff going on there as well, but Doug is not with us tonight, so we will skip mixing it because we mixed it up last time and got it all wrong. If you'd like to see how things went there, head over to openpaddock.net and check out Doug's articles on said Mazda Road Indy. Let's talk about the IZOD IndyCar series and the race that was there. I'm trying to be careful here. This is a case where we have people who say that, well, obviously on TV we saw what we saw, which was a pretty uneventful event. Racing-wise.
Up until the red flag, I was getting lots of sleep.
Yeah. However, there are people that were actually at the track that said yet again that there was passing on track and that the TV actually missed a lot of the on-track action.
There's all that passing behind Oriol Servia jockeying for position to try and – or not Oriol Servia, on EJ Viso.
Yeah.
It's all that passing in the EJ Viso train.
Yeah, that was – bad. I was like, are they gonna like make him get out of the way or?
Yeah, you got 20. You got 15 or 20 cars following behind EJ Viso, and they can't get by him. It was pathetic, and it was like forever.
Yeah, I was like watching. I was dazed and confused as I was watching this train of cars. I was like, wow. I was like, are they gonna like make him move? What is he doing? And I mean, it was really crazy to see Viso actually qualify that well and then hold everybody up. A lot of people said there was some issue in qualifying, and we'll go there first because, you know, a lot of people said that there was problems with qualifying because of traffic, couldn't get a clean lap out in traffic. Those people who said that would be Dario Franchitti. Dario Franchitti said,
I won the Indianapolis 500. What am I going to do first? Ed Carpenter got in my way. Sorry.
Wow.
Dario, wait. Dario, Ed was just taking a defensive line around the track. You should understand that concept.
Nice. Yeah, it was...
Lap 199.
Yeah, it was... It was definitely, it was, you know, definitely, I didn't actually see the qualifying session, but, you know, I did hear that he was a little upset with Ed Carpenter. Ed, obviously not a road course specialist like Dario, even though Dario hasn't really performed much like a road course specialist this year. But, yeah, you know.
Still, Ed was like 3 seconds off everybody else in the field. He was not going quickly, so.
He had a really bad weekend. He's had two bad, well, yeah, two, never mind, I'll scratch that, strike that, as they say. Yeah, so, but we finally get to the race, and it was really Scott Dixon and the Honda show. I mean, Will Power was right up there with Dixon when they qualified, but Power became kind of a non-factor at the end of the race, obviously, because, you know, there was a red flag break. But we already mentioned the EJ Viso train, which was, as you put, 60% of the field could not pass him. I was wondering when they were going to start, like, just having drivers, like, have Hunter Ray move out of the way and let Briscoe come up and try to pass him.
Nice.
And then, like, Briscoe couldn't get around him. So it's like, okay, come on down. You know, come on down, Sebastian Bourdais. Can you pass him? No, you can't pass him. Next. I mean, it was just terrible. I mean, Hunter Ray was all over the back of Viso. Viso is sideways through half of these corners, and he's still in front of all the other. I mean, he's still in front of the whole field practically. I mean, even sideways and about to wreck his car, he manages to stay ahead of everybody else. But yet, yeah. Once he collected himself, he still was holding him up. I mean, it was just a real disaster.
Yeah, you know, and what that really points to is, yeah, those cars were faster than Viso. They wanted to get by Viso. They just couldn't pass him on that track. They talked a little bit about next year opening up some of the turns that they had historically used in the past. But I think what they need to focus on before next year is, like, resurfacing the entire monster piece of junk track. Sorry. Yeah, you pointed out at the beginning of the show, or excuse me, before the show. Roger Penske, you screwed up, buddy.
Yeah, he screwed up not only from the layout standpoint, but let's just get to the 20-ton elephant that's sitting in the room. And that was obviously the two-hour red flag for the Bondo break.
Wait. It's a red flag for a two-hour-long Bondo commercial.
Yeah. I mean, talk about absolutely the worst possible thing you want to have on a return back to an event. And, I mean, you had chunks of the racing surface, much Daytona-esque, coming up and punching, you know, damaging the Indy cars. And the cars actually looked like they were taking flak cannon rounds because bits and pieces were, like, blown off. They looked like old B-17s coming back from Berlin. I mean, yeah, it was awful.
What was ridiculous was, you know, Hinchcliffe straight-lined into the wall after hitting that that chunk that ripped up out of the track. And immediately after he hit it, and he's in the wall, and they started talking on the telecast about what happened and why he hit the wall, then they started showing zoom-in close-ups of all of these issues that were all across the track, not, you know, from the two corners, you know, stuff torn out and, you know, stuff coming up and all that. And it was like, you know, less than a minute after the accident, and they're showing one picture after another of all these hazards, and you're like, how come it took this long to notice this?
I was like, why are we just now talking about these?
Because until then, they said nothing on the telecast.
And it was really Hinchcliffe who brought it up because they played his team radio, and he was pissed.
Yeah.
He was just like, you know, the racetrack's coming up, they leave it on the bleeped track, and this is what happens. I was like, oh my God. I was like, James Hinchcliffe rage. Which granted he had reason to be upset. I mean, I'm not saying that he had no reason to be mad, because clearly I would be honking pissed too if a big chunk of racetrack came up and straight lined me into the tires. But at the same point in time, I was just like, wow, impressive. I never heard that the little Canadian get so mad. So
yeah. They interviewed Bo Bearfield, Racer Magazine did, and they had some question and answer with him. And they asked him about that specific incident, and he said it was a perfect storm that brought that chunk out of the track, because the three cars that went ahead of Hinchcliffe through that corner, just immediately in front of him. All three of them took the exact same line. Their tires went across the exact same spot. And after those three cars came by, it just ripped that piece right out of the track, and Hinchcliffe went right into it.
Yeah, and I know a lot of people are saying – a lot of people have said, well, this isn't a perfect storm. This was just bad, blah, 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 blah. No, this was, I think, his particular incident, you know, with the way that happened. Because, you know, I'm willing – Bo Barfield gives me no reason why I should doubt what he says.
True.
When Bo Barfield talks, he is not a guy who's just going to say a bunch of crap just to appease everybody or just to toe the company line, basically. He's a no BS kind of guy. And if something's broke or if something's wrong, he's going to say it. So I'm not really going to say, oh, well, look at that, towing the company line, another quote-unquote perfect storm thing, because people instantly go back to Las Vegas when they hear that, sadly. But, you know, it was not a perfect storm event. I mean, it was a perfect storm for this incident, but at the same point in time, the whole entire track, like you and I talked about beforehand, I mean, that was just absolutely pathetic.
Yeah.
By the promoter and by the series for not doing their due diligence, like you said, but just atrocious for the promoter, because it's like, dude, that's your racetrack that you want them to come race at, and you don't have it in racing order at all.
Yeah, and even go beyond that, you know, you've got a city, Detroit, that's desperately trying to recapture an image of days gone by. You know, as we talked about before the show, Trackside Online pointed out, in 1950, Detroit had 2 million people living in it. Now, Detroit has 700,000 people living in it. 1.3 million people have left Detroit in the last 60 years. 1.3 million. That means 1.3 million people worth of infrastructure is rotting in Detroit.
Yeah.
And apparently that was shown to us on this track, because the track was literally rotting before our eyes. It looked like the rest of the roads in Detroit.
Yeah. And you know, obviously no offense, but it's like,
for a city that wants to change their image, this was not the best racetrack to show the rest of the world that you're turning it around.
And Michigan is not that far away, is it? The Brooklyn, Michigan track?
No, and it just – I can understand why they want to have the race in Detroit, because it's easier to get executives and everything to go to the race in the city instead of, you know, going out in the countryside to see the track.
Mm-hmm.
But for Chevy, I can't understand why they're more interested in sponsoring a race at a street course instead of an oval. I don't understand that. But – then on the other side, you can show a race at a street course, and it looks like it's full. Whereas you show a race at any oval these days, other than Indy, it looks craptacular on television.
Of course, it made business sense, I guess, from that standpoint. It was just really really tough, though. I mean, because I wanted the event to succeed very well, because I don't hate Detroit. I love Detroit. I think it's a great American city, but I just thought that the way that it was portrayed in the in that particular light was just really bad. And it really is what do you call it? It seemed very desperate. And I think that with a little more planning, have it thought out a little bit better, maybe you could have done a better job. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, really, it does come down to you didn't have the best of surfaces. It hasn't been used in years. They had rain on Friday, which prevented them from getting cars out there on this surface to actually give it, you know, a test to see if the track would hold together. However, you know, once the event happened during the race, and you go to red flag, and that track worker walks out there and grabs one part of where the track was coming up and just peels it back. And the next thing you know, he's got 15 feet of asphalt patch in his hands.
Yeah, that was bad.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, seriously, if you can do that, you probably could have kicked that out before the race.
Oh yeah.
Well, that's not necessarily true with the amount of,
there's a lot more running and pulling and all of that.
With the underwing downforce generation that's going on with these cars, it was really sucking that stuff right out of the track.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, terrible, terrible indeed. But you know, we'll see what they can do. We'll see if they open up the track a little bit more, or it, better yet, we'll see if they, if they decide to, do any kind of a repave job or put down any more of that Bondo stuff over a more kind of a permanent.
Yeah, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. I think the track is concrete, and the reason that they've got those asphalt lines in the track is because those are, you know, places where the track expands and contracts.
Mm-hmm.
But I may be wrong on that. That was just my impression from, you know, waking up from my stupor of, you know, this race is awful, to, whoa, what happened to Hinch?
Yeah, right. Off he goes.
I honestly just wasn't paying much attention. I mean, you know, we've had fantastic races at Long Beach, of all places. We've had fantastic races this season at Barber, places that traditionally are not, you know, passing friendly courses.
Yeah.
St. Petersburg was fabulous. Yeah. And then we come here and it's just like, put on the reins, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Holy cow. What happened?
Yeah. Yeah, again, Bo Bearfield, you know, in his interview with Racer, he brought up the fact that, he was questioned about how they chose the shortened event. It was originally scheduled for 90 laps. They went into a 2-hour break where they called up NASCAR's finest and had them come out with their, you know, tubs of Bondo and plaster the track.
Mm-hmm.
And, flashbacks of Daytona right there.
Yeah, exactly.
And they had to determine the race distance. We didn't hear it until it was going green that the race distance had been shortened to 60 laps. The race was stopped on lap 45.
Yeah, and the TV people, Marty Reed in particular, was confusing the hell out of everybody. Because they're like, oh, we don't know. We don't know when it's going to go or how long it's going to go or blah, 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 blah. And I was just like, Marty, shut the hell up. I was like, you're not doing anything but confusing the hell out of people.
Well, I didn't see that part because I went back to sleep.
Yeah, he was just being
I went out to dinner, recorded the rest of it, and came back and skipped past 2 hour. You know, bad television.
Yeah, I was just like really pissed. I was like, come on. I was like, why are you, you know, why are you sitting here kind of fanning the flames, if you will? You know that they just said this amount. It's like, just stop. But I digress.
Yeah, well, so they shortened the race to 60 laps, and part of their reasoning for that was Firestone had the teams change tires during the red flag. Because of something they were seeing on the cars. I really didn't look into what that was, but they weren't happy. And that meant several of the teams, you know, all of the teams were down one set of tires. So Barfield decided that the best way to shorten the race was to take it down a stint so that the tires wouldn't be an issue for any of the teams.
Hmm.
Then further, the additional 15 laps, he decided that the best thing to do was to make sure that, you know, everybody could finish the race on their current fuel load. So that's how the 60 laps was arrived at. Now, whatever you want to say about that, at least it was fair to everybody that was out there because nobody else had to stop and everybody had enough tires to finish the race and all that kind of stuff. But that said, it might have actually been interesting to watch that go the full length because Dixon might have been able to lap the field and then come back and lap Will Power again the way he was driving.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Schumacher-esque.
Oh, yeah, we'll take that. I'll take Schumacher-esque.
There you go.
It's going to be a Formula One weekend.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe Schumacher will finally win.
That's a good track for him.
It is.
Good track for him. So as long as he can dodge all the students protesting on the track.
Nice. We'll get there.
Yeah, I'll
briefly.
Get there.
Okay, so let's see that pretty. Let's talk about the results then. I mean, did you do the results?
Yeah, the results are in a PDF, though, and they're difficult to get to, so I'll cover them. Scott Dixon ended up winning, of course. Dario Franchitti worked his way up from 15th up into the second spot on the podium. Really good drive for him.
That's, really good restarts.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he picked up, like, six spots on a restart, looking very Tony Kanaan style at the, you know, scalping cars on the restarts and everything. I haven't really heard anybody grumbling about, you know, being taken advantage of on restarts yet. I've seen things that I think are a little bit questionable, but I haven't heard any loud complaints. So I wonder where that's going to go, because race control has yet to wave off a restart. And are they doing it perfect? I don't think so. But then again, we'll see. Simon Pagenaud finished third. Good run for him. Started fourth.
Another good street course run for him.
Yeah, started fourth. I mean, Simon Pagenaud so far, I think he holds the record this season. No, it's Oriol Servia, who has passed more cars than anybody else.
Like 73 or something like that.
Yeah, Will Power had a lackluster fourth place in this race. He followed Scott Dixon in second spot through most of the race until those last restarts. And you know, the next thing you know, he's fourth. He just lost spot on restarts. Oriol Servia fifth, Tony Kanaan sixth, Ryan Hunter Ray seventh. And let's see, looking down the list, Marco was 11th there. Shout out for you. Ed Carpenter, as bad as he was on road courses, he still beat Simona in 12th. But Simona finished 13th in that machine of hers.
Slotus.
Yeah. Anyway. People going out. Justin Wilson went out for mechanical problems. James Jakes out for mechanical. Sebastian Bourdais and Rubens Barrichello also for mechanical issues. Takuma Sato, of course, and James Hinchcliffe both crashed out right on the same lap. Sato straight-lined into a barrier. He just was overambitious and driving like he normally does, which we love him for it.
Yes.
And Hinchcliffe, of course, was straight line into a barrier after having, you know, a chunk of asphalt wedged into his underwing. So lots of fun. And the lap leaders for the race, straight from the box score, laps 1 through 60, Scott Dixon led the race. He never relinquished the lead, even when he came in for green flag stop.
Because he's a boss.
Owned that race.
That is the definition of being a boss.
Yeah, so Scott Dixon takes away max points from the weekend, and that brought him up to 206 points in the championship. Still second to Will Power at 232, but the way things are going right now, unless Chevy can reverse this horsepower thing, I'm going to be surprised if Scott Dixon and Will Power are fighting this out all the way to the end. We were thinking Will was going to run away with it, the way things looked at the first three road street courses. But Honda's recovered vastly with their refreshed engines with new software and all that, and then also the updated turbo intake. So it looks like Honda's got something, and it will be interesting here in June. I think it's after Texas that the Chevys and Hondas can update based on performance gap. And I think in June, Chevy's going to get the update.
Yeah, they're going to get the update this time. And Lotus is going to be allowed to make a whole brand new car.
Yeah.
Fix this.
Oh, wow. Yeah, Lotus. Ah, how sad. But, yeah, still in the championship. Dario Franchitti's managed to work his way up in the fourth. He is still at 176 to Will Power's 232. So coming along, but he's just 1 point shy of Helio Castroneves in third, tied with James Hinchcliffe. So
Hinch is starting to slide a wee bit.
Starting to slide, but, man, wouldn't it be great for him if he ends up the season beating the rest of his Andretti Autosport teammates? I mean, for him, that would be phenomenal.
Oh, yeah. He would be pissed.
Yeah. Then
or the other teammates rather would be pissed. He'd be elated. I'm sorry, but the other teammates would be pissed.
Simon Pagenaud is just having a phenomenal year. He really is in you know, brand new team, first time rookie IndyCar driver. He's going to be up there beating everybody's butt all season the way things are looking right now. Sam Schmidt's put together a heck of an effort.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so anyway, that's enough for current standings.
Yes. So we now move to some of the hot news in the paddock area. Hot meaning Catherine Legg is involved, my new wife. But no.
And she's going to have some extra time on her hands.
Yes, exactly. but the Dragon team was not able to secure two cars for after Indy, or two engines rather, for mm-hmm. their two cars after Indy. So they have went to one car with a split entry. Catherine Legg will be running the ovals, and Sebastian Bourdais will be running the road and street courses. This actually works out well because, as we all know, Bourdais is going to be in Le Mans, and the next stretch of cars or of races will be on the ovals.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to be in Le Mans Milwaukee weekend, so there he was already not going to be in the car that weekend.
Yeah.
But...
So there's that, and then we had the awesomeness that was the revolt.
Indeed, it's getting to be quite interesting. The team owners have been making lots of noise, and they've been making interesting amounts of lots of noise regarding Randy Bernard. Specifically, the owners, some of the owners have come out and told Randy that they would rather that he disappear.
Yeah, they were not quite happy for a number of reasons. The two big reasons that seemed to jump off the paper were the Honda Turbo Gate situation mm-hmm. and the chassis cost. The people saying, well, this car costs more than what we were told it was going to cost, and we don't like that. Well, Bernard made the whole affair public on the Twitter. And then he, you know, basically had to answer a bunch of questions in Detroit, obviously, because of it. So the media flocks all over him for it. And he says, you know, hey, you know, I don't work. He said, I work for a board of directors. I don't work for the team owners. Mm-hmm. So basically what he came out and said was, you know, hope in one hand and shit in the other and tell me which one you get first. And I was like, nice. I was like, I like the bravado. Very good. Very good, Randy. Very nice indeed. Tell those people to shut up, because you know I have not been a fan of them since the Aero Kit gate, which we'll get to that again.
Yeah.
But here's the problem. Here's the thing I have. You know, you want to get on board. You want to get on Randy Bernard because of the cost of the new car. That's fine. But it's a fallacy on the teams for not financing enough money for cars. And people are going to say, well, what are you talking about? They were told it cost this much. Well, like all things with a new car, it's never going to cost exactly what somebody says it's going to cost. Just because the dealer says that it's going to cost, you know, you see something on TV, it says Honda Civic Si starting at $19.99. Well, you know, $19.999 or whatever they say. Okay, great. That doesn't matter. When you get there, after taxes and everything else, it's going to be more. It's the same kind of thing with this car. It's a brand new car, so he says it's going to cost this much. That's a real rough baseline. It's the team owner's fault, and they're picking hairs here, complaining about the cost of the car, because they should have financed money knowing that this car may need tweaks or that it may need modifications. It's a brand new model line. You cannot expect it to be 100% perfect every time. I mean, it is a Dallara we're talking about. Safe cars, yes. Amazingly eloquent cars, not so much.
Well, and they're going after the wrong person.
Yes.
Honestly, Randy Bernard is a promoter. He is not there to set the costs of cars. He could set a target, but he's not on the technical department. He's not anything on the technical side, and he can't steer that cost. Well, the only thing Randy Bernard could do to guarantee that that cost was $385,000, like they projected at the beginning of the deal, is pay for it out of IndyCar's pockets, which they're not very deep these days.
No, they don't even do that.
or pick somebody other than freaking Dallara.
Well, there's your best option.
Well, what it comes down to is the team owners are upset about several things right now, and it's kind of coming out, and it's coming out sideways. First of all, who was calling for him to be ousted?
We thought it was Penske, but we were wrong, obviously.
Yeah, I don't think it was Roger. I think the things that kept coming up, Robin Miller says it was John Barnes from Panther.
Yeah.
I've heard a couple of times we've heard Michael Andretti's name thrown around, and maybe that there's some grain of truth to that, because at the press conferences this weekend, Randy Bernard was just all over talking about Michael Andretti and how great he is for the series, and about how, you know, he stepped in and helped them promote the two races that just about disappeared this season and gave us like a 12 race schedule.
Yeah.
he runs cars. He runs three cars full time, five cars in Indy, and then runs cars in the entire ladder series.
Yeah.
There is not an IndyCar owner right now that is better for IndyCar than Michael Andretti.
Oh, truth. That's 100% true.
But that said, if Michael Andretti's upset with the direction of IndyCar and he's all in with IndyCar, maybe they need to listen to him. So I don't know.
True.
I don't know.
But I mean, it's just one of those things though. Even if you want to blame the people who were the ones who worked on the car, or like the technical people, the iconic committee, or anybody else for that matter, you don't have a reason to be mad at them. And team owners, in order to run a successful business, granted I'm not a team owner or a business owner really for that matter, it doesn't matter. I know business 101, and that is you set aside extra money for stuff like this. You just do. And if you don't, it's a fallacy on you. It's not a fallacy on the team owner, or on the people who tried to get you a car. Because you bitched all year because you were tired of running the old cars. We bring in a new car that, you know, and you bitching because you got a new car now. And then you start bitching because it costs more. The way I look at it.
Complain that it wasn't the Delta Wing, because so many owners wanted the Delta Wing.
Yeah, you wanted the Delta Wing, even it was the most atrocious looking IndyCar design I've ever seen in my life. You know, shut up. Just shut the hell up. It's not one of those things where, you know, basically what it comes down to is you can say, well, you know, if you're not making people mad, you're not doing it right. Well, that may be fine, well, and true, but if they're going to smash on Randy Bernard for coming out and saying, you know, you guys are disappointing me, you know, then they need to shut the hell up, you know, themselves, because all they do is come out and complain and leak their little encrypted press releases that they have. Their little, you know, John Barnes gets on Twitter, I don't like Randy Bernard. I don't. It's an embarrassment. $25,000. You know, I mean, I don't think, do I think he should have been fined for that? Obviously, I said I didn't at the time. I still don't think that. Here. But the same fact here. Of the matter is this. Just shut the hell up, dude. Nobody cares what you say. Nobody does, because nobody works for you. You guys are just pissed because you don't have any more leverage in the series aside of pulling your cars out. And if that's what you want to do, fine. What are you going to do for a living? Go race NASCAR and get your ass beat. Tell me how people who've left IndyCar to go to NASCAR, tell me how that's worked out for him. Penske is one of the most popular guys, you know, one of the best, he's the best IndyCar owner of all time. He went to NASCAR and can't even get it right. Ganassi, same thing. So please, John Barnes, take Panther Racing out of IndyCar, take it to NASCAR and get your ass kicked, and then come back and tell me how the series is in such shambles and how you're pissed at the direction of IndyCar, because I think you got it pretty damn good right now. And rant.
It's interesting. You can understand where all this comes from, though. I mean, we can track it back to a few different things. Number one, the owners used to have more say under CART. Obviously, they ran CART into the ground because they couldn't come to an agreement with the Indianapolis Motor Speedway's current head, or then head Tony George, and because of that, CART disappeared. Now, we can argue about the whole split and how it all came about and who got the better end of it and what happened. But in the end, the owners couldn't agree with the track operator that mattered the most, and he took his ball and went home.
Yeah.
You're in a different situation now. The owners are upset, but they can't force IndyCar to do anything unless they, you know, take their ball and go home. And they don't have as much leverage. But here's the thing. They're independent business owners. They have to be able to make the bottom line work. And IndyCar is – it's a series of diminished capabilities for them as to making money and making ends meet with the team and everything. And they're not just worried about the cost of the chassis. They're also talking about how the increased crash damage – one of the owners was saying that, you know, his crash damage was, you know, 30 some percent higher than what it was in years past for similar incidents, because again, they're buying all these parts from Dallara, and Dallara can charge whatever upcharge they want on these parts. And as long as IndyCar lets them, they're going to get away with it. And they've been such good partners with Dallara for so long. The owners are concerned. I think the owners were unhappy that IndyCar picked Dallara to go with the new chassis to begin with. Regardless, they had this Delta Wing idea. I don't think they're terribly sold on the Delta Wing. I think they're more sold on getting Dallara out or getting competition for Dallara.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's just, I don't know. I just don't think that they really have. I know they have to make it work, but you know what? If they don't like it. You know, they need to be working with IndyCar to come to a solution, not sit and bitch about it.
They were told the car would cost $385,000, and those that lived in Indiana and purchased it under their program would get it for $150,000 cheaper. Mm. I mean, seriously, your previous car was $700,000.
Yeah.
For a rolling chassis with spares and everything like that. Now you're down to $385,000, supposedly. Well, it turns out the owners are saying it's really between $500,000 and $600,000.
What?
It's still cheaper.
Yeah, still cheaper. And they race pretty damn good.
Yeah, and you know what? I think the crash damage is down this year because these cars aren't wrecking all over the place.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, who was the one who said that they had a problem with the crash damage?
Somebody that wrecked in practice or qualifications at Indy. It wasn't Sarah Fisher.
Not Carpenter. I can't think of anybody else.
Not Carpenter. Dang it. I can't remember who it was that was talking about it. But they said, you know, they were out $270,000 on crash damage, when in the past they would be lucky to spend $180,000 on the similar crash.
Is that Dreyer and Reinbold? Are the guys at Giant Ramble? Because they're the only other car.
Yes, it was. I think, you know, that's right. I think that's right. That car, if they want to say they've had wrecks like that before, they're wrong. Yeah. That was bad.
Yeah, that was – you hit the middle of the pits, man.
Yeah, you hit the attenuator after, you know, basically spinning down the pit lane. Ugh, ricochet off two walls and then hit the attenuator. That's
going to cost you some money, bro.
Yeah. So, you know, but you throw into that, Dallara's missed a lot of their targets. You know, they said the chassis would be lighter. It's barely lighter. It's not the 100-some pounds lighter. It's like 10 pounds lighter. I don't know what it is. But it was significantly higher in weight than they said it would be. It's significantly more expensive than they said it would be. They went back to X-Track, the gearbox supplier, and made them lighten the gearbox to try and make up for the weight imbalance in the rear of the car that Dallara designed into the car and said, oops, I guess our models were wrong.
Yeah, we don't think we got that one. We should probably press.
Yeah,
we could spend a lifetime talking about it, honestly.
Anyway, the owners are upset with Randy about these issues with the chassis. They're upset with Randy about the issues with the Honda turbos, and Chevy didn't get the way they wanted on it, and Honda did, and now the competitive balance is switched. Hey, this is engine competition. We wanted it. This is exactly what we wanted, and I'm happy to see it. It's great.
Yeah.
But they wanted him out. Randy tweeted about it, and the next thing you know, everybody's like, well, Kurt Gavin's like, oh, I can't believe he did this. This is unprofessional. He shouldn't have done it. And then other people are like, it's great. The guy's got his back against the wall, and he says, screw you. I report to the people who run your dang speedway. You know, that bread and butter that you wouldn't exist unless it existed.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I don't know. Fine him if you want, if that'll make it better, but I think it's just fine. I think you can go on Twitter. If you got a genuine beef with something, you can go on Twitter and say something about it. It's not unprofessional. he turned the tide. Instead of letting the story all be about how Randy Bernard's messing things up, he turned the tide, and everybody's like, "Well, who said that?"
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, the guy who said it's like, "Ooh, didn't count on that happening."
Let's do an over-under. Randy Bernard has a contract for 5 years with IndyCar. He says he believes, you know, he will not, you know, shirk on the contract. He's going to finish his 5-year contract. I don't know. Do you think he's going to be here past 5 years?
Yes.
Do you?
Yes.
I don't.
I do. I think he will be. I think that the people, it's always the ones that you think are not going to be around much. Or you think they'll get out, you know, when it's kind of their time to go. It's always them who stay and make it like a whole lifetime thing. I mean, you got to think about it. If he can bring back IndyCar from the dead, which is basically what he's doing right now.
Yeah.
How can he go anyplace? I mean, who would you trust to take that over?
Well, that's fair. I'm just saying, I wonder if Randy wants to be here after 5 years.
Oh, I think he does. I think he does. I think he understands. I think he understands that, yeah, okay, they're mad, but he wants to work towards, you know, I think he'll be here. I really do. I'm willing to almost bet on it, but I will not bet on it because I'm really terrible bad luck, and that would mean that I'm betting that Randy Bernard would stay, I would lose, which would mean Randy Bernard would go. I like Randy Bernard. I've disagreed with some of the things that he's done. I've disagreed with some of the things that the series have done. That's fair. I've never went out and said Randy Bernard's a giant douche. I've just said that I don't agree with what he's doing, and I don't think there's a lot of credibility in the championship. But they fixed that. He fixed it this year by hiring Bo Barfield and putting, you know, Will Phillips in the mix. And I respect that. He went out and proved me wrong, and I'm going to be the first to admit it. So I think he'll stay. I hope he stays. I think he is what IndyCar needs, and his continued fresh ideas and ability to promote this is what it needs. And I think that once he sees the fruit of his labor after 5 years, provided it's what I think it'll be, I would have a hard time letting go of something like that, of an accomplishment like that.
Yeah, well, it's pretty interesting right now because, you know, you got the owners who are really bristling against Randy, and they're bristling against, well, we'll talk about the Aero Kits next, but they're bristling against that. You've got events that aren't going to happen or were in threat of just disappearing forever, like Baltimore and Milwaukee. You've got this whole thing of China that's still floating over our heads. Like, we're supposed to race there in August, and it doesn't sound like we're going to. all kinds of weird stuff going on. And while I believe that, you know, looking ahead to next year, now that we have the new chassis, that we have the potential of these Aero Kits going into next year, people are going to be more interested in the series. But they've got to get through this year and look good. And you know what? Those Detroit numbers are going to be crap when they come out.
Oh, yeah, it's going to be embarrassing.
I mean, hey, you were up 8% on viewership of the Indy 500, coming off the centennial year, which was, you know, hype and hullabaloo, and you're coming off the end of Danica Patrick and IndyCar, but you're able to increase the numbers 8%. I think that's dang good.
I think so too. I really do.
So, going forward, I hope it works. Okay,
Let's talk about these Aero Kits.
The owners, I guess, got together at Detroit this weekend and unanimously agreed that they don't want Aero Kits for 2013.
Well, yeah, they said that that right now the competition is just fine, and that by having the extra Aero Kits brought on, that's just an extra expense they don't need. I've got an idea. How about companies make the Aero Kits and make them available if they want to?
Yeah, and just like you want it for this year.
Yeah, and if you want to buy it, sure. If you don't, not my problem. Really, honestly, I mean, this is ridiculous. They've had plenty of time to try to raise the necessary funds for these things, and, you know, they didn't. I mean, okay, so what if the car is a little bit more expensive than what they originally said? You know, just make it available.
IndyCar says an Aero Kit will cost $75,000.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have to buy spare parts. Well, hang on. If you crash a Dallara right now, you got to buy spare parts. you got to buy parts to replace those aero bits. So this is 75 grand. I understand that 75 grand is a lot of money to me. Can't you get a freaking sponsor?
Yeah, one sponsor. Just one sponsor. Like an associate sponsor surely would be able to produce $75,000 to buy a kit with spare parts.
Yeah.
It's just like somebody says on the forum, on this article, IndyCar needs to allow the kits to be made and used. If a company does not want to make one, nobody is forcing them to. If a team does not want to make spend the money, keep using the Dallara Aero kit. And, you know, if they think 75 grand is going to be the savings are going to be passed down, then, you know, go for it. But, you know, I think I'm with them. I say make them available. If people want to use them, they can. If they don't, they don't. I don't see the aero kits. I have no way, shape, or form any evidence that would make me think that the aero kits are going to play that big of a role to where it's going to be like a game changer and people are going to have to spend that 75 grand.
Yeah, I'll tell you, when the owners got together, you know, Roger Penske got all the owners together last year and got them to complain. It was 13 months ago. That Roger Penske got them together and said, we don't want aero kits. Okay. And the league turned over and whatever. Now we're going through the same thing again, but 13 months ago when that happened, my own opinion at the time was if it doesn't happen now, it's never going to happen. I hope it does, but I don't think it, I didn't think at the time it would. I've been encouraged lately because they've actually been talking about it and all that, but you know what? If the owners are going to sit there and complain about it now and say the same things they said last year, oh, it's just too expensive. We can't afford that now because we're just dirt poor broke and we can't afford anything. And really, basically, you're making the same argument you made last year. We just can't afford to do it. We can't afford to differentiate the cars. We can't afford to have some level of competition brought back into the series. We'd rather have Spec Dallara with a Honda and a Chevy engine, just like we did a few years ago when it was Honda and Toyota. And Chevy was Lotus at the time.
I don't know. On to other things. You know... Did you well, it came out that Lotus is looking for a second driver to take over a second car. They only have one car currently, and that's Simone DiSilvestro and HVM. Basically, what they're trying to do is find a rich driver who wants to come in and waste his money to help kind of just test, have Lotus test the engines. They're saying right now that with just having Simona in the field, they're not getting the amount of
data.
Testing data that they need to develop the engine, which is really just a vicious circle for them, to be honest.
It really is because, you know, just like we have briefly mentioned, Bo Barfield's came out and said, hey, if Lotus comes out at Texas, they're going to be parked again.
Yeah.
If they can't run at race speeds, they're going to be parked immediately because it's even more dangerous at Texas than it is at Indy.
Oh, yeah.
So, like I said, by lap 7, Simona is going to be black flagged. Okay, I've got an idea. Let's get some dumb rich idiot to spend a bunch of coin to come sit in this car for 6 laps. That's a great idea.
Yeah.
Marty Roth.
There you go. Can I raise that money and actually be brought on to drive? Can I do that? Can I find like the not $8 million or whatever it is to run and then just go out there and
sure can
turn laps?
And while you're at it, if you had $8 million, you could probably buy Lotus.
Yeah.
Not a seat in their car, but you could buy the company. The way things are going right now.
I'll just take the whole thing. Thanks. I'll just take the whole operation.
I certainly understand what Lotus is saying. They need more test data, and they can't get it with these cars. But why even bother at this point? Seriously, you are a laughingstock, and it's a travesty. If you come out and you somehow, in June, fix your engine so that it can be competitive, that would be phenomenal, and I'll be so excited, and I'll be the first to say I'm a freaking idiot for what I said tonight. But really, why would you even bother? why would any, you know, they're saying, oh, you know, teams like FanForce United would be perfectly interested in running the rest of the season with our piece of crap in the back of their chassis.
Nice.
Sorry. I think FanForce United would be better served running the rest of the season in lights.
Yeah, agreed.
Or USAC. True. Or Grand Am.
Oh, Grand Am. They're picking up speed. All right, so let's talk about some other things. China, I believe, is next on our list of topics. China, Mike?
It's just fairly interesting. We still do not have China set in stone. Okay. And as far as things go, I guess that they have a new mayor in China. Mm. And because of that, it's made it difficult to get everything signed and done. Mm. At this point, it looks like China is not going to happen. Huh. If it does, great. If it doesn't, you look like Cart. Good job.
Yeah.
There is supposedly, you know, Randy has said there is a plan B. Plan B most likely is to run the same weekend as ALMS at
Road America.
Sweet.
Please fail. Yeah,
seriously.
Please fail, China. I don't hate China, but please fail so I can watch IndyCars at Road America. That would be amazing.
Yeah, and here's the thing. If IndyCar goes to Road America at this late date, here's what you can expect.
Me?
You can expect, number one, yeah, I'm kind of thinking the same way. If they do end up going there, I'm looking at tickets. I'm looking at making that drive. But anyway, if they lose China, that's a huge swing on their balance sheet. Yeah, number one, they have to make up for China because they have to have 16 races to honor their contract with Izod.
Mm-hmm.
So they have to make it up. But if they lose China, they lose that sanctioning fee, which is supposedly around the $8 million mark.
Hmm.
That's an $8 million swing on their balance sheet.
Yeah, that sucks.
And most likely, if they go to Road America at this late date, the sanctioning fee is going to be about $52.
Yeah, right?
Maybe 53 if they're lucky.
Yeah, it's going to be cheap.
So, what a mess. I mean, I hate to be this way, but you have this mess in Detroit this weekend, the garbage about the aero kits, the owners, you know, meh, we want to sound like Dario Franchitti, meh.
Oh, nice. Yeah, you just got us blocked. Thanks, a-hole.
You know, they're complaining and wanting to oust Randy. We can't get the race in China to go. It's a great way to follow up the what a phenomenal Indy 500 we had. And then we get to listen to this all week.
Yeah.
I'm very negative right now. I guess I should go hang out on track forum some more.
Nice. Yeah, they'll welcome you with open arms.
Welcome.
Welcome, brother.
Welcome
back to Champ Car.
let me get this right. If I say IndyCar is doomed, then I belong, right?
Yes, you do. Welcome. All right, so let's get down to our Texas preview and picks. We've went back to the standard 550, and that being the 550-kilometer format. We've ditched the really stupid Texas two-step garbage that we had last year that was a complete farce and a complete championship wrecker because it was, in fact, a exhibition race that actually paid points. I don't know how that works. I don't know if I want to know how it works. All I know is I'm really glad that Randy Bernard and Mr. Gossage have not opted to do that again because it was, in fact, the dumbest thing I've ever seen in my life. Fun, perhaps, but how about we do it and not award points? So, and maybe even do it after the 550. Okay, so I guess let's just go ahead and take a look at the picks. This is a mile and a half, so obviously a little bit of, going on. oh no, the world is doomed. Las Vegas this, Las Vegas that. I don't think it'll be, I can't really say because I didn't see the car's test and there wasn't enough to really gauge how this will act. But I want to believe that all of that is just junk, fear over what happened and is not actually a real problem. So, I hope. So, let's, without further ado, I guess we can go ahead and get into our picks. We made them before the race this time. That way we didn't look like idiots stumbling. Derp, derp. By the way, last week's podium challenge for Belle Isle, I won the week yet again to extend my lead to 50 points because I picked Scott Dixon to finish second, and, well, he won. So that means I get points. And I think the only other person who got points was Doug because he picked Dixon as third, so he got the 5 points because Dixon won. So that makes the current tally myself 183 points, Mike a distant 133, and Douglas will be a 96-point, well, whatever. He's there. He's playing. He's playing the game. So, yeah, going forward, we don't have Doug's picks. We shall have them next week. My picks for this week was Scott Dixon for the win. So I know that Mr. Matt Bauer will be a happy boy because I've picked him to win. Either that or doomed him. My second place is Tony Kanaan, and my third place is Marco Andretti, with my first out being Simone DiSilvestro, because Bo Barfield told me it was going to happen.
Nice.
So, now, Michael, your picks? Oh, my, the late drama on the spreadsheet. What the hell is that?
I'm a homer.
Wow.
Scott Dixon for
really
the win. He is
not to win.
Scott Dixon is the king of the mile and a half ovals, and it's really hard to pick against him, especially after the Honda has resurged. Frank Keady will be second, putting Ganassi for 3 weekends straight with 1-2 finishes. And third place will be Ed Carpenter, because I am drinking the Fuzzy's vodka. I am. It's not Kool-Aid. It's the vodka.
Nice, nice.
Because the last time I saw him race on a mile and a half, he won.
Oh, so, yeah, Kentucky. Good call. Yeah. You bumped your boy Servia off the podium.
I did. Servia's been doing well, but I had to think about that one. That was a pick with the heart. It wasn't a pick with the head.
Oh, and Carpenter?
That's a pick with the head. Trust me, it's going to happen. Third place,
right,
or he's going to wreck. He's going to Sato the weekend.
Nice. That would be... we'll see what happens.
And then first out is Black Flag for Simone DiSilvestro. I think you agree the same thing. You know, unless we have a lap one calamity, Simone will be the dog. And, you know, this weekend's going to be interesting because it's not going to be the dicing that we've seen at Texas before. You're not going to have the side-by-side racing like they've had at Texas because they're punching these huge holes in the air. And they can get these toes and whip around just like they showed us at Indy. I'm thinking we're going to continue to see that kind of dicing, but not running side by side, lap by lap. They're going to be shooting around lap by lap. The other thing is they took enough downforce off these cars. They're hard to drive. They're difficult to stay in pack formation, according to what Ed Carpenter was saying, and he didn't like it. So maybe I should reconsider Ed Carpenter.
Yeah.
Maybe I should, you know, Takuma Sato. Yeah.
Yeah, go. Go, Sato.
So we'll see what Doug has to say on the picks. But looking forward to Texas. I will probably be watching it next Wednesday, though, by the time I get back from the mountains and get a chance to sit down and absorb IndyCar and Formula One after the weekend. So.
Yeah. All right, well, that's all we have for the IndyCar, and that is pretty much the show, but we are going to go over a quick rundown, and I'm talking like maybe 60 seconds, over stories that you need to know about or need to research on your own time if you are a fan of said series. ALMS announced that they have set a date to race at the Circuit of the Americas in 2013.
That's fantastic. Look at the schedule they've managed to get together. Yeah, Coda.
Oh,
you got F1
amazing.
Racing there. You've got ALMS. You got DTM. You got MotoGP. I mean, seriously, that it'd be worth getting those freaking, you know, 60 grand season pass seats that they've got.
Yeah, I'm starting
there.
To think that I might need to go make an investment, as I will call it.
Yeah, and they did go ahead and announce ticket pricing for the Grand Prix. General admission. This is, I was kind of surprised. I was expecting much worse. General admission for the entire weekend is $159. Turn 11 grandstand, that would be at the end of the long, you know, hairpin at the far end of the track. That's $269. Turns 2, 3, 4, and 5 on the front stretch and through the whole mess there. Those are going to be $299 each. $399 for turn 12, and the upper rows in turn 12 are $499. That's kind of in the stadium section that they made to look like Hockenheim.
Mm.
So very interesting. Turn 1 grandstand seats are not listed because turn 1, yeah, you had to get the super duper special seats to do that.
Yeah. All right. Well, talking about other things, Formula One and American, Bernie Ecclestone had called the New York F1 race into doubt. New York says, shut up. We're just fine. Bernie says that they're missing contractual deadlines. Spokesman for Grand Prix of America said, we are in fact not. We don't discuss those in public, but we are right on schedule with the track and everything's going good. And hey, even the local communities are super excited about it. So I think this is a non-story, much like Circuit of the Americas was, honestly, where is it going to happen? It's not going to happen. We're going to push it back. I mean, look at them now. They're doing just fine with the construction. So I really don't think it's going to be a big deal.
Something's bugging Bernie, though, and we'll just have to wait and see. But the fact is, Circuit of the Americas is supposed to be perfectly 100% privately funded, the New York F1 race, the New Jersey Grand Prix, is supposed to be 100% private funded, and they haven't announced who their backers are yet.
Yeah.
So there is some concern there, and that may be, they're just missing financial deadlines for Bernie, and obviously that's all that matters to him. So,
yeah.
However, throwing your drink in the face of Bernie, Sebastian Vettel, because he's going to be over here for the Canadian Grand Prix this weekend, is going to be on Letterman.
Yay!
And he is also going to take a lap of the New Jersey Grand Prix roads in his car.
The F1 car?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
However, obviously it's going to be kind of like they did at the at COTA with the big old knobby tires and slowly patrolling around the track. So anyway, speaking of Canadian Grand Prix, that is going to take off this weekend. Pretty excited to see that one. That's one of the best F1 races of the season. However, students in Canada are going all French. They're revolting over tuition costs, and that's threatening the Canadian Grand Prix. They actually canceled the pit walkabout on Thursday coming up because they're afraid the students are going to get in for the reduced price and cause havoc, throw paint into the end of the garages or something like that. Big mess, because if you're going to the Canadian Grand Prix this weekend, boy, I hope this doesn't derail the weekend, because dang it, that's a great event. It's a great city. They do it right there, and it'd just be unfortunate to see this one hurt. But supposedly Anonymous has gotten into the mix, and they're going to make a big deal with F1 websites, and then these students supposedly are going to try and shut down the Grand Prix.
This is why I've stopped covering Formula One. I don't want to be targeted by Anonymous.
Yeah, indeed. Red Bull this week had the holes in the – Red Bull this week had the holes in their floor deemed illegal. They had a couple of holes just forward of the rear wheels that supposedly were channeling air to the underside of the diffuser.
Yes, it looked like it could be feasible to argue that.
Yeah, so anyway, they've been deemed illegal and will not be using them forward. Supposedly there was some sort of backroom agreement between the teams that the other teams would not dispute said holes in the floor after the race at Monaco as long as Red Bull took them off. So when the FIA said you can't use those anymore, Red Bull said we weren't planning on it anyway.
Well, let's talk about a disaster, shall we?
Yeah, indeed.
The World Rally Championship lost Nokia as its backer. This was set to be a long-term deal, but something in the government of the sport all of a sudden was really bad, and now
I would say that would be North One Sport disappearing.
Yeah. Now Nokia's title sponsorship of the series is gone, and also Walk-In Fresh, a fresh story showing that the event organizers are threatening to walk away from the World Rally Championship. Basically, if their races or rallies are not being promoted, they are not going to submit the form that the FIA sent them that they need to send back. It's a 5-page single season agreement from the FIA, and it has to be signed and turned over to the FIA by June 8th, which is this Friday. If they do not do so, they run the risk of losing their spot on the calendar. And so this is people actually stepping out and saying, hey, FIA, we're really concerned about this. And we want our events promoted. We want our countries promoted. And you can't guarantee that you're going to do that for us. So we're not going to, you know, unless you give us some solid, you know, yes, we'll have this, or yes, we'll, you know,
yeah,
promote, then we're not going to play.
Apparently, this is over, you know, obviously money, but last year, the fee for running an event on the calendar was 140,000 euros. Mm-hmm. Going next year, the FIA has tacked on an additional $125,000 in fees, €125,000 in fees on top of that 140,000 euro calendar fee. Because of, you know, for promotion and for, you know, timing and scoring and various things like that, you're pretty much doubling the cost of the grant to
of the
hosting
rally,
an event. And how can these events absorb that when supposedly it was being handled up till now by the FIA and now it is not?
Yeah, it's going to be tough.
Hello, IRC.
Yeah. This could be bad.
Why would you sign that?
Well, you wouldn't.
No.
No normal man would.
Jeez.
All right, let's move domestically for some rally action. STPR this weekend. Special thanks to Mr. Turk and his wife for heading out to the rally for us and doing some great work out there. It was good stuff. And also the Oregon Wings gentlemen, Mike Shaw providing us with some stuff. And Antoine Lestage won the rally. Second place was David Higgins. Higgins and the boys suffered gearbox issues in the first stage, so they went all the way back to 13th, but charged all the way back to be contention. Behind him, Crazy Leo finished third overall. So Lachlan O'Sullivan wins again in Super Production, so a kind of a shift in power. Myself and Doug thought that that was just mainly because I'm terrible with the names. Travis Hansen, we were under the impression that Hansen was just shaking down his engine, as it is a new engine since the last time they competed. Two-wheel drive went to, sorry, I'm reading it kind of on the fly here. I forget. Okay, so Duplessis wins. Duplessis wins because the Australian driver, you know, that came over in those, Will Orders, the guy who came over in those Silvias, his car broke down. Basically, Duplessis took the lead over the teammate of the Summit Rally team, Ross Allen, and that was that. So they've taken Chris Greenhouse as well, returned to the two-wheel drive class podium, and a newly acquired 03 Neon SRT4. So there you have it. Duplessis back to his winning ways after some WRC Academy. So there you have it. Special thanks again to those guys for going out there and cover that event. Mike, that's all we have for this week. Do you have anything else that you'd like to say?
No.
I would like to say that if you guys are bored, on the 24th, on the 24th of June, that is, I will be broadcasting my second race. I broadcast race now, Mike, for ETV Live. They are a sim racing company that actually goes and broadcasts iRacing events.
Oh, wow.
That people pay them to broadcast, and they have these hosted championships that they broadcast. And I luckily, along with Sean Pivick, who is a Twitter friend, he and I broadcast the first Le Mans race. It was a 2.4-hour race from Spa.
Oh.
So it was a just over 2-hour race. And it was the first time I'd ever broadcasted a race. I was kind of like the de facto David Hobbs, where he did all the talking and I just kind of added my color play by play.
Nice.
So apparently it worked. Apparently it worked out kind of well, I guess. So it was a good time though. I had a lot of fun. If you guys get bored and you want to watch it, you don't have to have iRacing to watch the races. Maybe one day I will actually compete in the race. I don't know. But my iRacing future is on the line at the moment. I think I might retire. So we shall see what happens going forward. But yeah, if you're bored, just head over there, just Google ETV Live, and you can click on the Road Racing channel. That's where I will reside. And also check back, because there may be a show in the near future where we talk about road racing and some sim racing events that happen. So definitely, yeah, lots of stuff going on in this world. So
does iRacing correctly model, you know, like, track degradation, like asphalt coming up out of the track, or does it correctly model student revolts, you know, hindering nice. Grand Prix, or rocks thrown onto the track if you're in, you know, Australia? Or
I think that's for the next update.
Or crazed people in kilts running down the side of the track.
Oh, nice. Yeah, we had a couple of those, but they were actually competitors. No. No. Yeah, it was
great product.
Yeah. Awesome. Now, ETV does this fantastic job for their coverage of sim races. So if you're a huge sim racing guy like myself and you have a private league that you want to have broadcasted, go ahead and give a shout out to them. They'll be more than willing to assign some people. Hell, maybe you'll even get me to do your commentary for you if you want, if you can stand me for that long. I mean, you already probably can't long enough for the podcast. So, but that's all we have for this week. Shameless plug there at the end. I'm Sean, and this is Mike, and we are going to say goodnight, and thank you for listening. And Doug will be back next week.
Good night.